music and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin, and I am your virtual host today. I am recording this program from the comfort of my own home on Zoom because I have an interview with someone on Zoom coming up to play for you. My guest later on in the show is Helena Sifferling, the executive director of Living in Community, and I'll be talking to her about an upcoming conference that is for and about sex work and advocacy. So stay tuned for that. Before we hear that interview and get to it, I want to start with a song, as we usually do here on Intravenous. We're going to hear a track from Alison Goldfrapp. This is Fever here on Intravenous.
Story.
All right. As I mentioned in the introduction to the show, I'm joined on a Zoom pre-recording here for today's show. I've got Helena Sifferling, who is the current executive director of Living in Community and the spokesperson for their upcoming conference, Moving from Response to Resilience, Collaborating for a Better BC for Sex Workers, to talk about living in community, but also the conference that is coming up. So happy to have you join me, Helena. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on today.
I want to get started by just, you know, a 101 kind of on what living in community is and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Living in Community, we are a nonprofit organization and we're also a charity as well. We are based in Vancouver, but we work across the province of BC and actually beyond the colonial borders as well. And basically what we do is education and advocacy around the needs and the rights of sex workers. So we don't provide any frontline services, but what we do is really work with those frontline services, with sex workers directly, kind of through those organizations. And we kind of bring everybody together to say, okay, what's going on in your communities? What are the needs that you're seeing there? What are the service gaps? What are the government policies that need to change? What are the laws that need to change? And then based on bringing everybody together, hearing from everybody what they are needing, what they're experiencing, we kind of then combine all of that knowledge together, and then we go do advocacy and education work with what we're hearing from everybody. We hear especially from frontline organizations in maybe more rural or remote communities that they, you know, often maybe don't have the staffing or the funding to like participate in all these government consultations or learn about the legislation or the bylaws or kind of understand all the bureaucracy that can go on with these things. But what's really helpful for them is if they have somebody, which is us, who can do that for them. So yeah, we don't provide frontline services ourselves, but basically we combine all of that knowledge together and then we go fill that role of saying, all right, this is what we're hearing from sex workers and from people working on the front lines with sex workers. And therefore, these are the things that we recommend that you change. So we speak to governments and maybe other organizations, others who have power to change things, and kind of share with them what we're hearing from sex workers.
That's really great. To be the intermediary between, you know, the frontline workers and the governments providing advocacy. What can you tell us about where the inspiration or influence came from to start Living in Community? And have there been like particular milestones or I don't know, you know, those successes and challenges that organizations go through from inception to where you are now that are kind of remarkable?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There have been a lot of changes along the way. There has been a long history, so I can give you a little bit of that for sure. So Living in Community got started in the early 2000s, about 2003, 2004. And we got started really just in the city of Vancouver. And more focused, especially around the downtown east side of Vancouver as well. So folks may remember, and this will be a little bit of a trigger warning just to let folks know. Folks may remember around that time, of course, there was a serial killer who targeted a lot of marginalized women, including folks who were sex workers. And you know, some other things as well meant that there was not a lot of trust, particularly between sex workers and police. And there also, you know, were maybe business owners or nonprofits or others in the community that would see, especially street-based sex work. So folks who might work out on the street and think, you know, I don't want these people coming in my neighborhood or I don't want them around here, for various reasons. So just to kind of really quickly, I guess, summarize the situation at that time, there was a lot of distrust. There were a lot of people, in these communities in Vancouver kind of feeling like, what's happening is not working and we need a different solution. And the idea for Living in Community really came out of just kind of seeing if people could get together in a room and have a conversation and start to build relationships or not, or, you know, find out that there was not able, it was not able to have trust be built. It was just an experiment. And so initially, the way that Living in Community started, there were sex workers, there were frontline organizations, there were business organizations. The Vancouver Police Department was initially at the table. The city of Vancouver was at the table. So it was really, as I said, kind of an experiment to see if people could come together and talk and find common ground. And really what was, you know, one of the main things that folks found was, you know, nobody wants any workers to be unsafe. Nobody wants people to feel like their neighborhood is unsafe, including the sex workers who live in the neighborhood, right? And so, you know, the solution of criminalization was not working. The solution of sweeping people and moving them to another neighborhood was not working. So we needed something else. And so basically through some of those early conversations and early meetings, folks just kind of wanted to continue meeting, continue talking, continue trying to find solutions together. And so, yeah, some of those early milestones, there was an action plan in 2007 that got developed that had a number of recommendations, mostly focused on the city of Vancouver and then some provincial pieces as well. And then, you know, got some more funding, got some more support to continue. And then in 2014, I believe, they put out an update to the action plan to kind of say, all right, we have this new kind of model. We're bringing these folks together to talk, whereas maybe before they didn't talk that much. Here's what we've done so far. Here's what else we want to do now. And then maybe it's important to note as well, especially in the 2010s, the city of Vancouver really did a lot to move forward in quite a progressive way with their approach to sex work policy. So maybe I'll just briefly interject about the laws. So hopefully this makes sense. And I won't get too heavy with it. I'm not a lawyer, so I won't claim to know everything in depth, but just very briefly, the laws in Canada that have to do with sex work are federal. That's really all I'm going to say about that. But with that said, there are things that other levels of government can do to make sex workers safer and uphold their rights better, even though the laws are federal. So with that in mind, at the city of Vancouver, they really did a lot, especially in the 2010s, to kind of see what they could do as a city. So they held a task force that a number of my coworkers and folks who were involved with Living in Community at the time, they were on that task force, as well as other members of the community, of course. They then went on to hire two sex work social planners. So they have social planning staff specifically focused on sex worker safety. They did other things too, but the point of it being they kind of took an approach where they were like, okay, we need to learn more about what's going on in the community, what sex workers who live here, who are our neighbors and our constituents, what they need to feel safe. We need to, you know, provide more funding maybe to frontline organizations that are based here in the city that are providing these services. We need to maybe look into training for bylaw officers for them to understand what's going on. Maybe look into training for people, staff working in policy, in social policy, in planning, make sure maybe that when we're doing public consultations about a specific neighborhood, we're thinking about the sex workers that might live and work in the neighborhood and including them in the consultations too. So yeah, the city of Vancouver around that time was really moving quite a bit as well in terms of, being a bit more inclusive with including sex workers in their planning. Again, even though the laws were federal. And so with that in mind, I think because the city had been shifting a bit around that time, and also because Living in Community had kind of naturally over time been growing a little bit as people saw that this model was working, we began to shift to do more provincial level work rather than just work focused on the city of Vancouver. Not to say our work was done in the city of Vancouver, of course, there's always more to be done, but you know, it just sort of naturally was happening that we were like, maybe the need is shifting a little bit more to be more broad across the province. Maybe the next milestone I'll talk about then in 2019, jumping ahead a little bit, Living in a Community held our first provincial conference. And this was really the first time, yeah, that there was a provincial conference in BC that was focused on the needs and the rights of sex workers. There had been other, you know, smaller, maybe more regional events, but not a provincial level conference of this scale. And I should say this was all before my time with Living in a Community. So everything I'm sharing now is the work of my predecessors and the folks that came before me that, you know, laid so much of this groundwork. But what I understand is that that conference of 2019 was really the first time that a lot of folks, especially from outside of the Lower Mainland or maybe the Victoria area, got to kind of come together and meet in person and share, oh, you're dealing with that in your community? I am too, and I didn't know how to deal with it. Or, you know, we're trying to open this new outreach program or this new drop-in center, and we have no idea how to do it. Oh, I've met this person, and they are doing that in a small community too, or they're doing that with limited resources too, and so I can learn from them, and I can figure out how to do it where I am. So it was really, really, I think, just amazing. I'm trying to think of a more tangible adjective, but truly, it just seems like that was a really big moment in our history, in terms of people, yeah, being able to meet and build those relationships and learn from each other. And so really since 2019, I'm giving kind of a long history, but hopefully it's interesting. Really since 2019, we've definitely shifted to be working more provincial in scope. So coming out of that 2019 conference, we started to convene this network of provincial stakeholders that, again, are mainly frontline organizations in communities all across BC. There's one up in the Yukon as well, so it's broader than the borders here. And yeah, we started to do a lot more work to kind of bring these folks together, help them learn from each other, and do more advocacy, more focused on the provincial level as well. So yeah, those were the main markers maybe so far. And then maybe last one I'll add in there is that up until 2020 as well, we were kind of just this small project, you know, off the side of some people's desks, trying to, I guess, as I said, sort of just see what people needed over time and respond to those changing needs over time. But in 2020, we finally incorporated as a nonprofit. And then just earlier this year in spring 2023, we got our charitable status. So that was also a pretty big moment, I guess, in terms of really clarifying, oh no, this seems to be this convening model of really bringing people together, kind of, yeah, broadly from different sectors for folks to come together and learn together. This model is working. This model seems to be a thing people like and want and see value in. And so, you know what, we're going to set up as our own organization. We're going to become a charity. Yeah, so that was a pretty big moment as well. Yeah, and that brings us now to holding a conference.
Yeah. Congratulations with all of that. And it, you know, it strikes me how, you know, with the way that the conversation has shifted and changes, that it kind of opens up and allows for you to incorporate and, you know, really shine in the model of convening people who are interested in talking about it and moving the issues forward. So that's really exciting. You know, we're talking about sex work and sex workers, and I think that when people hear those terms, it comes with a lot of understanding or misunderstanding, depending on, you know, how we think about it. How do you define sex work, and what exactly are we talking about, and who are we talking about?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'll speak about that a little bit, and I'll also say, and this is not a marketing ploy, but we do education, and we actually do have a new online education component as well. So if folks are listening and you want to learn more, go to our website and you can learn more about our courses. And yeah, I don't say that just to try to sell training, but more so to name that there are a lot, I think, of misconceptions about sex work or misunderstandings about it, or people just feel like, oh gosh, I don't know about that, but it's kind of stigmatized. I don't really know. So one of our courses in particular really focuses on just kind of breaking down the stigma about sex work and understanding what it is, really from a non-judgmental perspective. So for example, I'll just give you a tiny little teaser. Yes. So one of the exercises in that course just asks people to reflect on, you know, what did you learn growing up about sex? You know, did you learn that it was meant to only look a certain way, only be between certain types of people? You know, it gets into some of that. It asks people to reflect on what they learned about work. You know, is work something that you do because you're passionate about it and you love it every day, you love it, Or is it something you do to get a paycheck, to pay your rent? Anyway, and then it gets into thinking about what are your thoughts about sex work? What were you taught about this? What did you learn about it? What have you seen in the media about it? So all that to say, we do break this a lot. We break this down in a lot more depth. So feel free to check out our website for more resources. But with that said, the basic definition that we use around sex work is saying that sex work is the exchange of money or other goods for sexual services provided by a consenting adult. So we really only, I guess, talk about or focus on adults that are consenting to doing this, of course. And yeah, sex work can include lots of different things. I spoke a little bit earlier about street-based sex work. So that's folks that you might see standing out on the street. Of course, there's lots of other places that sex work can happen. It can be online, it can be indoors. There can be obviously folks that do maybe exotic dancing, pornography, cam work, lots of different kinds of things. So yeah, the umbrella is quite large, basically any type of sexual service or sexual adjacent service provided by consenting adults. Yeah, and maybe I'll just name two, because this is another common maybe trope that we see in the media. We see maybe like the pretty woman type of stereotype. So I do think it's important to name that, though, you know, statistics are a bit hard to come by and not always only the thing to rely on, but though the majority of sex workers probably identify as or present as women, there, of course, are sex workers who are men, who are transgender, who are queer, who are gender diverse. There's folks from all kind of orientations and experiences who do sex work. So someone you know might be a sex worker, even if you don't think they, quote, look like it or act like it. Sex work is really, really diverse.
I think age also fits mm-hmm. into that category. You know, there's no sort of limit to, and of course we're talking about consenting adults, but, you know, from the age of moral majority all the way up, also fits categorically in there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very good point.
What can you say about the ways that opening up and changing the conversation about sex work and sex workers matters? Like, why should we be talking about it?
Well, yeah, I think for several reasons. Of course, I'm biased because I'm here with Living in Community. Doing this work every day, so that's the bias that I hold. However, I think that the issue, I guess, to follow that of sex work is not, you know, just a niche sort of issue happening. I think to me this is really at the overlap, I guess, at the intersection of a lot of really key movements that folks are fighting for. So, for example, at the conference that we're holding next week, we have a keynote session that will be about sex work as work and talking about the labor lens of sex work and why, if you are a union or you want to support labor rights, employment standards, people having access to job protections and other rights that workers have fought for a long, long time, you should be supporting sex workers and thinking of what you can do to do that in whatever sector you're in. So we'll be talking about, you know, how because the laws are the way they are in Canada, sex workers can't work together in a group to stay safe. They can't unionize. they are really prevented from having access to a lot of the other rights and protections that other workers have because they fought for them for so long. So there's really a lot of important linkages, I think, for the labor movement. This is also, you know, a human rights issue in terms of, you know, the perspective of if these are consenting adults doing what they want to do in their own homes with their own money, why is this something that we want to regulate? So why are we making laws and policies still based from this kind of moral perspective? Of course, famously, it was former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau who said, this is not the exact quote, I'm going to get it wrong, but he said something right about how the government doesn't have a place in the bedrooms of the nation. So why are we still making laws against consenting adults engaging in sex work? So there's really important legal questions, there's really important human rights questions, labor questions, health questions. And I think ultimately to just to come back again to the stigma, I think in our culture, you know, we have a lot of hang-ups still around sex and around people doing what they want to consensually with their own bodies. So I think, yeah, I'm getting very broad, I know, with what I'm saying right now, but I do truly think that spaces like this for us to talk about sex work, you know, it isn't really important to focus on sex work as a specific sector that we're here to organize on. And at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that this isn't some, as I said, niche thing happening in one place that's not connected to the other movements. This is really part of, as I've said, labor movements, human rights movements, legal movements, et cetera. And yeah, I think that's another hope that we have for the conference next week and for the work we do generally, is to really kind of show people, if they don't already know, I know more and more people do, but if anyone doesn't, to kind of show them and make it clear, you know, this is part of your movement too. There might be something you can do if you're a lawyer or a teacher, or you work in government, or you work for a health authority, or, you know, wherever it is that you are, there might be something that you can do. If you're a student, maybe you write a paper on it in your class. Maybe you learn more about it that way. So there's lots of different ways I think that folks can realize and recognize the sex worker rights movement as part of what they are doing, for sure.
I'm sure that there are more challenges than not sometimes, just because there is a lot of social stigma, and, you know, the narrative that we often hear, and you described some of, you know, what that looks like and what that sounds like. But can you identify some of the bigger challenges to shifting this social narrative that we live with or live under?
Yeah, I can try for sure. They do get really big. I mean, I do think the biggest thing, though, which I've touched on a little bit, but the biggest thing for sure is the laws. I said before that I wouldn't get into the details of the laws, but maybe I'll add a little bit more just if folks don't know. And it can be quite confusing and just kind of convoluted too. So basically what the laws are here in Canada is something called asymmetrical decriminalization, or the Nordic model, sometimes called. So basically on paper, this means that to do sex work yourself is not illegal, but anything else around it basically is. So to buy, like to purchase on the purchasing side of sex work, to work together, as they said, in group, to hire, like if you want to hire like a bodyguard or a driver, somebody to keep you safe, that's not allowed. You can't, as I said, organize, unionize, you can't advertise your services. So of course, while on paper, that's the way that people, I guess, argue for that model or claim that it works, is because it's not criminalizing the sex worker themselves. So it's meant to keep those folks safe. But in practice, of course, what happens is it makes it really difficult to like negotiate terms or talk about what you're consenting to and not consenting to in advance, to work together, as I said, to maybe have a place of employment where you feel safe, to have a safe place to do your work. So it creates a lot of barriers and a lot of struggles. So truly, I think that's definitely the biggest hurdle, the biggest barrier that folks have been trying to organize on, obviously, for a long, long time. And I think that also contributes a lot to the stigma, because, you know, naturally, I think a lot of us, when we grow up, we're raised to think, oh, if something's against the law, that means it's bad. And I think for a lot of us, maybe it's not till later in adulthood at some point where we learn, oh, maybe there's things that aren't bad just because the law says that that's what it is. Or there's things that used to be illegal, like being gay, being queer, that are like, that doesn't mean that's bad just because it used to be illegal. So it takes us some time maybe to think through that. So I think having the laws as they are now definitely contributes to some of that stigma continuing. So maybe I'll just add as well, if there are some other countries, New Zealand being one, where they have decriminalized sex work, there's still a long road to go, even in countries like that as well. But there are other models. So just to name that, this isn't the way things have to be. There are models of how we could decriminalize sex work. And if that was the case, hopefully the pathway forward would be that sex work would be regulated, would be treated as any other industry. So workers can organize, can unionize, as I've talked about, can kind of do what they need to do to work safely. And if, of course, anyone experiences violence or harassment on the job or any issues with an employer or with an employee, anything like that, they can go through, you know, the work safe processes that other workers have access to, occupational health and safety, through the legal system that other workers have access to. So basically would just be like any other sector. So yeah, I do think the laws, though that's obviously such a huge topic and a huge change that, as I've said, folks for decades have been trying obviously lots of different things to try to change the laws. And as I've said as well, there are things that governments can do in particular to keep sex workers safe and uphold their rights, even if those laws don't change soon. However, that is definitely a big hurdle that we still need to focus on for sure.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
You know, it sounds sort of trite to say, well, good luck with that. But honestly, you know, as you explain how all of these intersections between the different ways that other workers are supported and enabled and kept safe and, you know, legislated and standardized and, you know, all of the things and this sort of insecurity on a bunch of different levels that sex workers can experience, it really becomes, as you mentioned earlier, you know, issues of you know, what your human rights are and you know, what your legal stature is and, you know, all of these things that then again intersect. So next Monday and Tuesday, October the 23rd and 24th, at SFU Harbor Center, Living in Community is hosting the second annual conference, which, as I mentioned in the introduction, is moving from response to resilience, collaborating for a better BC for sex workers. Who is the conference for, and what do you have? Do you have one specific goal? Do you have goals? What do you hope to outcome?
Mm-hmm. For sure. So yeah, this conference, I should say, it is not the second annual. It's the second one since 2019. So that was the first. This is the second. You know, we did have hopes and dreams in early 2020 of holding the conference sooner, but I think we know why we weren't able to do that. So we are really, really excited and just very grateful that we feel we can safely hold a conference in person again now. But yes, this conference will be next Monday and Tuesday. And really, it's for a few, I guess, different groups of people. It's, on the one hand, it is for sex workers, of course. It is for the network of folks that we convene across the province, the folks that we work with, that we know don't have maybe many chances to meet in person and to come together and to, as I've kind of talked about before, maybe exchange information, get to know each other, learn from each other, deepen those connections, and really deepen that kind of collective voice for advocacy for the rights and the needs of sex workers across BC. But it's also for anyone else who wants to learn more about this. So for folks who maybe might come into contact with sex workers in their work. So maybe folks working at other frontline nonprofits in the legal sector, the anti-violence sector, the labor movement, folks in academia, anyone who maybe knows a sex worker in real life or wants to know how to support them better, how to deepen their understanding of, you know, the laws in Canada, the sex work stigma, different barriers folks might experience to accessing services like healthcare or housing. So we have sessions on the conference on these topics, which is why I'm naming them. And I think as well, really, if you're curious and you want to learn more, come to the conference. I think there's many folks who might also feel, probably understandably so, like, oh, that's really cool, but I don't know if that's relevant for me, or I don't know if I need to know that. I think there's probably a lot of folks, like maybe people who work in hospitality or at a hotel, at a bar. Maybe they run a small business in a neighborhood where they might see some maybe street-based sex work happening and they're not sure what to do about that. There's a lot of folks who might, you know, probably come into contact with sex workers or know sex workers, even if they don't know that yet. So yeah, I think there's just a lot of reasons why we hope the conference will be applicable and relevant and really interesting and really fruitful for all kinds of folks. As I've said, there's sessions on, housing and shelter needs of sex workers, the healthcare system. There's a panel on sex work and race and how that interacts. There's a panel on sex work and disability and how that interacts. We have keynote sessions, one I've mentioned already about sex work as work. We also have a keynote session on a report that recently was done with some research in the past few years around the Lower Mainland called the Bias For Us Report. So that was kind of a report where they interviewed, I think it was a few hundred sex workers around the region around what their needs were. So they'll be sharing the results of that report with us. And then the third keynote also is about the BC Bad Date and Aggressor Reporting Project, which is a really big provincial project that is doing some super exciting work to scope out basically a tool that sex workers from all across the province could hopefully tap into once it's created. They're still working on creating it to share bad dates with each other, no matter where they are in the province. So there'll be a way for this to be a provincially integrated system. And maybe I'll just briefly say, if folks don't know what bad date reporting is, that's basically if you're a sex worker and something happens that you don't like. So that could be anything from somebody wasting your time to like a physical assault or something like that. Anything that you would prefer not to happen on a date happens, you can report that as a bad date. And there are a number of local and regional bad date systems that exist in different cities or different communities, but there's not a way for all of them to be linked up together across the province. So if folks move somewhere new or if they don't know the community somewhere new, they don't have access to that information. So that will be a very exciting keynote as well, that we'll hear from that project, where they're at now, how that scoping is going for them, designing and figuring out how they can make that provincial bad date reporting system happen. So truly, I don't want to sound cheesy, but I think there will be something for everyone. If you are interested at all in, you know, what's happening with the sex worker rights movement right now, we'll have a session as well about the laws, which will touch on the recent constitutional challenge update that happened a few weeks ago that folks may have heard about. So yeah, I think this will be just a really good chance for us to touch on a lot of different topics, within the sex worker rights movement and really too, yeah, how that's connected into other movements around housing, healthcare, all those other sectors as well.
Yeah. Just from your description there, it sounds very rich, and a lot to pack in during a short 2-day period.
Yes, I think it will be. But, you know, I think we have a really good plan in place as well for how we want to bring everything together and turn it into action. So maybe I'll just briefly touch on that as well, which is just to say that, you know, we have, three keynote speakers. And then there's 9 breakout sessions touching on all these topics that I just spoke a little bit about. And so in each session, you know, we have people taking notes. We have facilitators who will report back on what's being shared. The general themes, of course, not sharing anybody's specific comments, not breaking any confidentiality there. And then at the end of the conference, the last session is an action planning session. So at the end of the second day, everybody will come together and our facilitator will lead everybody through a joint planning session and saying, okay, this is what we've heard from all of you over the past 2 days. These are the key things that kept coming up. These are the themes we heard across sessions. This was the topic that actually there wasn't a lot of energy about because everyone wanted to talk about that other thing. So clearly that's the thing we want to focus on. So through that session, we really hope to get at, you know, what are the key next steps that as a province, as a provincial movement, what do we really need to put our energy toward? And then coming out of that, Living in Community will be putting together a conference report, which will, again, kind of summarize the conversations that were held and the recommendations that came out of that. And we'll also be putting together an advocacy toolkit that we will, of course, share afterward and ask folks to kind of take up in their work alongside us. to kind of say, okay, here are the things we can call for. Probably it'll be focused on municipal government levels and also on the provincial government level to say, you know what, the laws are as they are right now, but this is what we've heard from people in our province that we can do right now. So let's focus on these things. So yeah, we do know that it's a lot to pack into 2 days, but with that said, I think all of these topics are really vital to speak about and to capture everyone's experiences and skills and perspectives on. And then, yeah, I think we have a good plan in place to hopefully put all that into action afterwards.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, that goes into helping you do what you do at Living in Community by, you know, getting the conference people to help put together the action plan that will direct your movement and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, for people and just the general public, maybe some of our listeners who aren't going to attend the conference, are there things that we can do and actions that we can take just as citizens to support a better BC for sex workers?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. I think, again, not to just sound like we're promoting ourselves, but do check out our website, livinginCommunity.ca. Not just for the training, we also have a bunch of free resources on there that people could check out to learn more. For example, there's a tab on the website called Sex Work 101. If you click there, there's like a sheet you can download with kind of some basics about sex work if you want to learn a little bit more. We also have resources. We have a bunch of different fact sheets that you can download and take a look at there about different topics. So there's more information that we you know, have out there. That so that's one thing people can do, I guess, is maybe just learn a little bit more, continue to educate yourself. And along with that, though, I would say, don't just, I guess, take our word for it. Another service or another page that we have on our website is there's a tab called Find a Service. And so if you're listening and you're not in Vancouver, but you might be elsewhere in the province, there's probably an organization in your community that serves sex workers. So also, I would say, learn about maybe what resources, what organizations are already there in your community as well, not just in the big cities as tends to happen sometimes. Sex work doesn't just happen in Vancouver, it happens everywhere. And another thing I would say is, be mindful of your language. And I think that's something folks can continue to learn about as well. So of course, I'm using sex work, you're using sex work, we're talking about that term here. There are other terms for it that people don't really use anymore. If sex workers use those terms themselves, we of course respect that, but in general, use the term sex work. along with that, though, there might be people who don't identify as sex workers, or they don't use that term for themselves, and that's okay too. But I would say if you're talking to people casually and they're using maybe other more derogatory terms, maybe just gently be like, hey, you know what, I think sex work is the better term for that. And you know, Halloween's coming up, maybe let's not dress as some of those characters that we might think of from movies or video games or that kind of thing. So yeah, I think there's some things that people can do around maybe your use of language, and just kind of general awareness around what sex work is and what it's not. And I think other than that, I mean, and it goes with what I said at the beginning, but yeah, follow along with not only what we're doing, but what organizations in your community are doing. If there are ever, you know, petitions or actions you can sign, donation call out, that kind of thing, you can probably follow those organizations on social media or e-newsletters or their websites, and just kind of keep an eye on if there's anything else you could do to support those frontline organizations for sure. And maybe final thing I'll say about that is we are getting into the colder months. So in particular, if you live somewhere that has maybe any outreach programs or drop-in programs as well, if they serve any street-based sex workers or folks that work more outdoors, check out if they need like mitts or umbrellas or jackets, any of those kinds of donations. I know we're getting into that time of year, so I'm sure that would be really appreciated as well.
That's great. And I will post the hot links for your organization's website and link to the conference when the audio goes up for this show, so listeners can find that information more easily than trying to remember it and spell it and all that kind of stuff. So, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
Oh yeah, there's one more thing for sure. And this is a fun thing, which is not that the rest of it is not fun, but this one might be extra fun. Which is just to note that in addition to the conference Monday and Tuesday, we're also holding a burlesque show on Monday night. So if you're not coming to the conference, if you're busy, if you have something else to do, but you want to come to a fun burlesque show, come check it out. So it'll be Monday night, the 23rd, at the Red Room downtown, just beside Harbor Center. And we have a really, really fantastic lineup of a lot of top-notch Vancouver-based burlesque performers that'll be performing in the show. And the way that we've set up the show as well, if you are coming to the conference, folks coming to the conference can come to the show for free, which is awesome. And if you're not coming, there are tickets available to purchase on the web, on the Eventbrite page for the burlesque show. So that's another hopefully fun little add-on that folks can come to if they'd like. And that's a way to also kind of support the conference and support living in community and get to learn a little bit more there as well. So yeah, come out to the burlesque show on a Monday night. Why not? Take the night off.
That sounds super fun and a great little adjunct just to add a little color, add a little sparkle, right? If you could just give us the details of the conference again, the where, what, how much, times of day.
Yeah, absolutely. So a conference again, as you shared, will be on Monday, October 23rd and Tuesday, October 24th at SFU Harbor Center. I think it begins at 8:30 each day and goes until about 4:30. And all the details are on Eventbrite. So yes, hopefully that link is available to listeners for the Eventbrite page there for the conference. And that page links to the Eventbrite for the burlesque show. It also links to the conference program. Like other information you need if you're not familiar with the area, like a map of Harbor Center, transit information, all that kind of stuff. So that's really the go-to place is that one Eventbrite page that has everything folks should need. There's also a lot of information there about all the different types of accessibility supports that we're providing at the conference. And what else? Info about the burlesque show, info about the sponsors, all of that is on that page. So yeah, folks can check it out on Eventbrite.
Okay, I'll make sure to get that hot linked in with all of the rest of the things that I was saying. I don't have any more questions, and I think we've covered a lot of material. So I want to thank you so much. My guest on Intravenous today has been Helena Sifferling from Living in Community. And we've been talking about the upcoming conference as well as a little bit about what why it's important to make changes in how we think and how we work around sex work. So thank you so much and good luck with the event.
Thank you so much. It's been great to get to talk about it with you today. And yeah, we hope it'll go really well. So yeah, thank you again for the opportunity.
So long. Again, I want to thank my guest, Helena Sifferling, who is the executive director from Living in Community, for joining me on Zoom to pre-record this program and encourage you to check out the conference that is coming up. Thanks so much for listening to Intravenous today, and stay tuned for Democracy Now!, which is coming up at 11 o'clock.
Nothing on the street tonight, it's emptiness. Heaven knows I've seen it all before. Nothing on the street tonight but a burning heart. Reaching out and ready to explode for the kiss. I would do most anything for the kiss. I would do most anything. Nothing on the street tonight but a melody. I listen now with one ear to the wall. Cause damn, you know that I would tear this city up if I could just get myself out the door for the kiss. I would do most anything for the kiss.